This is an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.
We have news of the launch of a compendium on how to make architecture more accessible now here on RNIB Connect Radio, as Disordinary Architecture Project have just launched many more parts than M. Reimagining disability, inclusion and accessibility compliance within architecture. And I'm delighted to say that visually impaired contemporary artist, consultant and co-director of the Disordinary Architecture Project, Zoe Partington, joins me now to give me a bit of an overview and an insight into how this compendium will help to make architecture more accessible. Hello, Zoe, and good to have you back on RNIB Connect Radio.
Oh, thank you, Toby. It's lovely to be here.
For listeners who may not have heard about Disordinary Architecture Project before, would you just give me a sort of a bit of a brief sort of background about the project and its aims?
Yes, of course. Really, it started about 15 years ago. It might be more than that now, when Joss and myself met, and we'd both sort of been thinking a lot about really access. I obviously was thinking about sensory access in architecture and design and the built environment for many years, because I used to work at RNIB, you know, in this capacity with the Joint Mobility Unit with Peter Barker. So myself and Joss met at some event at the Solent Centre for Architecture at the Royal Institute of British Architects on Great Portland Street. And we then started having conversations about how to change. I think it was the greyness, or the black and whiteness, if you like, of making it very exciting, inclusive architecture. It was still very sort of rooted in access audits and publications about, you know, health settings. It wasn't really rooted in disabled people being very creative with it and moving it on and it being exciting and vibrant. So myself and Joss started to work together. Joss obviously trained as an architect, which was fantastic, but also she worked very much in architecture, you know, in architecture schools and from a sort of educational perspective. So I think we were quite a good fit, because I worked as a disabled artist, you know, obviously very aware of wayfinding, being visually impaired, and all the, you know, the problems and the barriers in the built environment. So we started discussing and thinking about what could we do. And we got funding from Arts Council England to enable us to work with disabled artists to start to creatively, you know, address some of these areas. And then started, I suppose, over the last 15 years, working with architects, working in architecture schools, running workshops to get people to think differently, but all very rooted in the social model of disability and experiential learning. So not medicalized, you know, it wasn't about doing the sort of wheelchair challenge or, you know, sort of wearing sim specs, very much about real situations and real issues.
And I'm sure us all as blind and partially sighted people could come up with a few examples of very accessible and probably very non-accessible architecture. And was this the sort of starting point of the project of many more parts than M?
I think the starting point is that, you know, for a number of years, you know, Joss has written some fantastic publications around inclusion and architecture. But this has been more about how do we bring the vibrancy and the real people and the pictures and the imagery into a publication. You know, a lot of things are quite academic, so they're not necessarily, you know, quick to look at or quick to read. And many more parts than M was really, you know, starting to reimagine disability inclusion and access sort of beyond compliance. So I think that's the starting point. But also, I think a lot of the people that we work with, you know, would like information. Students studying an architecture school, they're really ready for something new. I think they struggle to find the types of publications that really answer the questions that they've been talking about and asking about. So I think, you know, a lot of it has come from our experience, from our networks, from working with a lot of disabled artists, but also listening to what architects and designers and people have been saying to us.
And Many More Parts Than M is full of great resources, detailed information and some fantastic case studies as well. Are there just maybe a couple of things that architects could take from Many Parts of M that would help them in making a more inclusive built environment?
Oh, definitely. And I think, you know, what's interesting about that is the more that you have a look at this book, the more you can find out, because there are links, you know, to podcasts, to films, to other information. And it might be something about, it's around the sort of language, isn't it? And it's starting to think about things in a very, you know, in a different way. You know, so it's starting to think about, you know, what's nightlife like for disabled people and how are those sorts of spaces designed for us all in mind? You know, how do we negotiate those environments? I suppose it's not just about thinking about access in that sort of usual way, but thinking about the beauty of and the value of incorporating a different sort of design that actually works for everybody. And I think, you know, I've worked a lot with deaf architects as well and deaf artists who, you know, they have a different way of orientating through space to how a blind or a partially blind person might. But I think it's the coming together and it's the dialogue, you know, that's really important about how we all use these spaces and how we might want to use these spaces together. So I think some of the projects we've been involved with, you know, have enabled us to start to understand that. But I think you're right. We don't actually have anywhere that's like a perfect example. You can get bits from one place and bits from another place. So I think this publication is the beginning of to start to map that out. But it's mapping things out in a way, I suppose, it's trying to really move away from this medical perspective of, you know, how a wheelchair user does this. We're talking about the, you know, the imperfections of space, you know, disability justice, disability etiquette, you know, the ways of being in an environment, the comfort, you know, sociability and comfort. That's the things we're interested in, I think, Toby.
And I believe you're going to be bringing a lot of people together at a launch of many more parts than M at REBA, the Royal Institute of British Architecture. And what would you like to see from the sort of, I suppose, this event of bringing a load of people together from the architecture world? Do you see it sort of influencing them and giving them that starting point and opportunity to chat with you and other people involved in the project to then influence them in making a more inclusive built environment?
Definitely, because it's those conversations, isn't it, that are happening. So, you know, there's quite a few disabled architects that are going to be on the panel for the discussion. We did another launch in Manchester with the Royal Institute of British Architects in the north. So, we're trying to cover quite a large area of the country. It's about working with disordinary architecture on, you know, how do we fund more workshops? How do we fund more residences? You know, we're currently looking at a program to develop podcasts about environments and spaces, you know, with architects, with designers and with disabled people. So it's really highlighting all the things that we might be struggling with or the things that are not quite right or the things that are fantastic. You know, where are those examples? How can we share those with architects and other people? And I think the event, you know, the fact that we're trying to encourage, you know, organizations like the Royal Institute of British Architects to get involved and to work with us on this means that those things can then be embedded, you know, in all those architectural professionals and are connected to REBA. You know, the everyday things that, you know, on the television, there's a lot of programmes of, you know, the prizes that Royal Institute of British Architects give to awards and things, you know. It'd be interesting to know, like, how many of those types of environments have disabled people on the panel making those decisions and those judgments. And I think that's what we're hoping to get from a lot of this. And also, you know, things like if we need a lot more publications like this or a lot more podcasts and a lot more films, hopefully people will be saying that. And then hopefully people will come forward, Toby, and help fund some of these things.
That'd be fantastic. Some people might sort of, I suppose, think that architecture would not be a good career for somebody who is visually impaired. But obviously featured in many more parts than M, there are disabled and blind and partially sighted architects. So architecture can be a career for us all.
Oh, definitely. And I think what's, you know, fantastic is that we've probably talked about it before, but just to let everyone know, we talked about architecture beyond sight. And, you know, for probably 5 or 6 years ago, we started working with the Bartlett School of Architecture on thinking about how blind and partially blind people could be architects and could go on the courses and could be involved. And one of the participants that came on one of our summer courses is now, you know, Poppy Leverson is a, you know, a qualified architect. She's working a lot. She's developing her practice. You know, she's one of those examples of people that are there doing it. We need a lot more, Toby, that's for sure. But I think part of Disordinary and part of the work that Joss has been doing is to bring more disabled architects together that are qualified or training or developing their practice to have more conversations together to support each other. But also, I mean, it's this thing, isn't it, trying to get a lot of those architects to be more involved in those conversations. And one of the other things is about, it's breaking down barriers, isn't it, to more people existing in these environments. And we know it's not just architecture, it's, you know, it's in heritage, it's in visual arts, it's in all sorts of things. It's making sure that disabled people are at the centre of these things and able to, you know, change practice, have opinions and make decisions, I suppose, that actually benefit all of us.
I think that's absolutely true. If, you know, more opportunities for us all as blind and partially sighted people to get involved with architects, get involved with designers and stuff, and, you know, add that input, which I think sometimes is probably missing, isn't it?
I think it is, and I think, and it's very subtle little things, isn't it? There's something that actually probably doesn't cost a lot of money, can make a huge impact if we get it right. And that's about it happening at the beginning of the design, not halfway through, or not in the refurbishment, or not in the adding it on at the end. It's about understanding, isn't it, how disabled people orientate through the built environment and managing spaces, and what else, you know, just comfort, or just about being able to lie down. And actually, it impacts on all sorts of people, you know, people that are having chemotherapy, or, you know, people that need places that, where the lights can be changed, or, you know, the intensity of light can be changed, or the acoustics have really been thought about. So, it's all areas of architecture. It's not just one or two areas.
Zoe, if listeners would like to find out more about Many More Parts Than M and Disordinary Architecture Project, where can people go to find out more and dip in and out of Many More Parts Than M?
Yes, so if you want to find out more about the Disordinary Architecture Project and about Many Parts of M, we've got a website, and it's disordinaryarchitecture.co.uk, and it's disordinary, D-I-S-O-R-D-I-N-A-R-Y, and then architecture. And then on there is a section which says compendium, so you can go straight to the compendium and sort of download the digital copies and versions, which we've been looking at. So we've got audio copies as well to help really, you know, make it more inclusive.
Well, thank you again, Zoe, for joining me here on R&IB Connect Radio and telling me more about Many More Parts Than M, which is a great resource for people to dip in and out of.
Thank you, Toby. That was really great.